As the internet and internet marketing have evolved, it used to be that you just needed to be good at traffic and you could get it to work. Well, now, in order to make marketing work, you need to be very resourceful and clever about what are you fundamentally offering people, even a lead generation device. What are you giving away in exchange for the email address? Well, in this day and age, it better be something pretty valuable.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. So let's join with Roland as he meets with insanely successful entrepreneurs who reveal their step-by-step mindset and strategies. In today's show, Roland is talking with Perry Marshall, who is a legendary online marketing strategist and author who is renowned for cracking the code to Google AdWords. In the show, Perry discusses an advanced perspective on the 80-20 principle, how to build impenetrable business models using the network effect, and he details his approach to investing and gaining equity in companies. Here's Roland and Perry.
This is Roland Frazier here at Business Lunch with one of the guys who I've followed probably longer than anyone else in marketing, Perry Marshall. Perry, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So what I'd love to do is just kind of start out talking about where did the Perry Marshall of today start prior to all of this? And correct me if I'm wrong, I remember before you went into consulting, you were doing something engineering-like, I believe. Is that correct?
I studied electrical engineering because I was obsessed with stereo equipment. And I had to know not just how to look up a formula in a book that would get me an acceptable result, but I had to know why did it work that way. It was like, I have to go to the bottom of the swamp. It's not like, I don't just want the handy dandy formula. I want to know from the inside out what makes it tick. I got a job in Chicago working for Jensen designing speakers for automobiles. I designed speakers in the Honda Civic and the Ford Probe and the Jeep Cherokee.
Really?
Yeah. And that was actually an exercise of, okay, you've got a budget of $15.50 for the entire car. Make this thing sound good. I've always liked the challenge of working within a constraint, sometimes even a severe constraint. Like even if you're building audio systems, I think okay, here's your budget and it's got to fit within these dimensions or it's got to fit this particular constraint is much more interesting than here, have all the money that you want, do anything that you want. Constraints force creativity, right?
Interesting.
So when I designed the system for the Honda Civic, it was literally, well, you got $15, make 4 16-centimeter speakers sound good. And I said, boy, that really sucks. The price had been ratcheted down so much that you're literally using the cheapest components and right. It was really depressing. And so I came up with this other design. I said, okay, how about instead of 4 6-inch speakers, let's do 2 4-inch on the front and 1 dual voice coil 6x9 in the back. Because I can squeeze a lot more bass out of a 6x9 than I can out of 2 6-inches. And I came up with this really nice sounding system for under budget. And my boss liked it. We took it to Marysville, Ohio, and we showed it to the guys in Honda. And this comes down to, you know, you need to sell somebody who can say yes and can't just say no. The guy we were meeting with was like some junior marketing guy at Honda.
Right.
And he goes, oh, well, this will never sell. This is 3 speakers and people are going to want 4. I said, no, it's a multi-speaker system with a subwoofer. Okay, that sounds way better.
So you're into copy all the way back in
all
those
the
days.
Way. Yeah, this is before I even knew what a copywriter
right,
was.
Right.
But I wasn't talking to a guy who even had permission to think. And so the thing died, you know. So the 96 Honda Civic has crappy speakers and I did the best I could. Trust me, people. Like I really tried. But like, can you redefine the whole entire problem before you even start? Because you could stretch $15 a lot farther with 3 speakers than you could with 4.
You were literally thinking outside the box.
I was literally thinking outside of the box. So I did that. Then my wife got pregnant. Then I got laid off from my job. And then I ended up having to go into sales. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I thought it was going to be easy, and it wasn't. It was bologna sandwiches and ramen soup and baked potatoes, and it was kind of awful. But, you know, trial by fire. I got fired from that job after 2 years because nothing was selling. Mm-hmm. Getting fired, knowing months before I got fired that sooner or later the wrecking ball is going to show up. Like, right. Look, when you're doing bad in a job,
right,
you know it. And so I was doing some major soul searching, and I kind of got straight in my head, okay, if I'm going to be an engineer who sells, I've got to be in the right situation. I can't just be like any other backslapping, joke telling, order taking sales guy. I've really got to find a job that will highlight my problem solving ability, because I hated being the car salesman.
Right.
I hated jamming the square peg in a round hole. No,
right.
No, like, you need an elliptical hole, right? And right. It needs to be like 14 centimeters by 11 centimeters. And it's going to have a certain curvature. And yeah, we're going to.
And like, they're like, we don't have that. Like, no, but we can design
and,
that.
Right. And I'm going to make this work. And so I found this other job and it actually worked. And this was in 1997. And they had a website. And they were actually generating leads on the website. And they had kind of stumbled into early online lead generation. And I knew before the first day of work, I remember it was a Saturday before the Monday when I started, I had this, it's like, this is going to work out.
And interesting. Why do you think you had that feeling? Because you didn't know anything about lead generation, right?
I knew a little. Now, I don't even think I understood what was going on in their website. But 6 months before, in a fit of desperation, I had shown up at one of these big success rallies in a big coliseum in Peoria, Illinois, and heard Dan Kennedy talk about
like direct market. Get motivated market. Or one of those kinds
of
things?
Yeah, one of those deals.
All right.
And Dan levitated $278 out of my wallet, which was a small miracle. It was like whatever the last credit card hadn't been maxed right. out.
Was that for magnetic marketing?
Magnetic marketing.
Fantastic program.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I bought magnetic marketing. I took it home. The next day I go to work. I tell my boss about it. He looks at me like, yeah, right, dude. Yeah, like you just bought swampland in Florida. Man.
Right.
Like do your job. Okay, Perry. Like just do your job. Right. But I took this thing home and I started studying it. Like, I think this could work, man. My boss won't hear a word of it. But I actually started doing these little experiments on the side. I started like sending out little tiny quantities of direct mail and making
for
postcards.
This business that you were working at.
Well, for some other stuff I was doing too.
Okay.
And I was just like, I was so desperate.
Were
honestly.
You playing with any business opportunity-ish kind
yeah,
of things?
Yeah, I was in Amway.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
In fact, direct marketing was how I figured out that Amway was never, ever going to work. Because what I did was I made a direct mail piece, and I was failing in Amway too. Like I was failing on so many levels. I was trying so hard. I mean, the level of stupid persistence that I was exhibiting at the time was just insane.
Was there another alternative? Like, was there a stable job that you could have gone to and kind of sold your soul to be unhappy at, but made the money? And
no, because I was still a pretty junior level engineer. Mm-hmm. My wife had come home from work. The most money I could make as an engineer would still be not enough to keep her home.
Okay. This was a, you got to find something.
Right. It was a do or die.
You tried Amway and I'm guessing some other business opportunity-ish kinds of things. What do you think about all that stuff? Like, what's your take on it?
Okay.
It's interesting how many people, including myself, got started on something that ultimately turned into a good entrepreneurial path through this kind of awful, in my opinion, horrible, can't win kind of scenario,
yeah.
like a lot of the network marketing things or business opportunities are. So I'm kind of curious as to that. I like that common theme that we all have.
So there's a yin and a yang with this. Let's start with the gratitude part. If I hadn't been in Amway for 6 freaking years, like I tried everything I could possibly try to make that thing work. I verified every possible way you could verify that it wasn't going to happen, okay? But I learned to tell a good story, probably mostly from listening to all those tapes and going to all those seminars.
So the training was good, but the opportunity was more challenging.
Well, the training was okay. Okay, the training was, first of all, the thing they were teaching you to do barely worked at all.
Okay.
Okay. Like it just barely worked. And they made it look like it worked with duct tape and baling wire and everything. And the training they gave you had a lot of holes in it, but they were really good at certain things. And what they were better at than anybody was storytelling. The whole thing was built on storytelling. You'd go to the evening rally and this couple would just tell a story and you would just feel yourself relaxing in your chair.
Right.
Right. And just getting into that storytelling groove. Right.
Did you kind of pick up that that was what was fascinating you and helping with those rallies at the time?
Or? Well, yeah, sure. Okay. I did. And I was fascinated with a lot of things. I was fascinated with the idea about being influential. Mm. But I think probably the biggest thing I took away was I absorbed the storytelling groove into my bones.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like I got it down. Like there's a certain way that it's just supposed to flow.
Okay.
Okay. And so later on, when I started writing copy and writing emails, see, I think I'm really channeling old Amway tapes when I write
emails.
That's
so cool.
Okay.
That's really cool.
So that's the gratitude part.
Right.
Okay. And I'm thankful for that. And look, the fact is, whether you like it or not, direct selling, even the old school kind of stuff that still goes on. I mean, MLM is still alive and well on planet Earth, right? And it probably always will be. It's a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And lots of people cut their teeth and they get rejection from their relatives and they try to sell the insurance and they try to sell the vitamins and they recruit the people and they go to the rallies and they get pumped up. What seems to happen to most people is they go through that and then suddenly they give up. Usually they quit it out of weakness, not out of strength. Hmm. Now, this is a big thing. Whatever it is you do, are you doing it out of strength or weakness? I think most people quit Amway out of weakness. Like they never actually even did enough to even deserve to think that they should be successful. Right. And then they just
They signed up and it didn't sell itself like they were hoping it would. And therefore.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's quitting out of weakness.
Okay.
I quit out of strength, which was I figured out this doesn't work. I figured out why it doesn't work. I reverse engineered why it didn't work. I reverse engineered what they told me that I thought it meant 2 years ago. And now what I understand it really means now. Like I even like dissected the pink Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And that was like a major part of my marketing education was to understand what had been done to me.
Right.
And I felt like what had been done to me, it was neither good nor bad. It was they applied it in an opportunity that really sucked, that was oversaturated, that was really kind of a Ponzi scheme, if you will.
Not that Amway is a Ponzi scheme, but that it was a situation that you felt when you did the math was almost impossible to succeed at the level you wanted to succeed at.
I spent money generating leads and I could get a lead for like $100 or $200. And when I did the math, it was like, these leads aren't worth $100 or $200. And so it was like, hey, wait a minute. When it was just shoe leather, I could delude myself into thinking that this is a good idea. When it was dollars in, dollars out, oh, this is terrible. This is absolutely terrible.
Right.
Right. And so,
was that like, the first time that you kind of did the metrics of, here's my customer acquisition cost or my lead cost and all that?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. And you just kind of, you didn't read a book about that.
Well,
it
was my Dan Kennedy magnetic marketing
kit. It was,
kit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good old
Dan.
Yeah,
it was because you listen to that thing and you do know the ABCs of direct marketing.
And
at
you
that
cannot
point.
Walk away from listening to that without being excited, I think.
Right.
Even now when I listen to it, because I'll listen to it ever so often again, and I'm like, damn it, I want to go market restaurants because I just send out these things. And like, you know, it's like, you know.
Yes. So part of why I felt good about this job was, so there was this question they asked me in the interview. They said, so Perry, let's say that we didn't have enough money to put you on a plane and send you to go see all these people. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I guess I'd sell them to them over the phone and over email.
Right.
And that was the right answer. That was the answer that got me the job because they didn't have the money.
Okay.
It was a $2 million software services company with a $200,000 product line. And my job was the $200,000 product line. If you do the math on that, like they didn't have any money.
Yeah.
They could barely hire me. So they hired me for $35,000 a year plus commission. It's like, go Perry. Well, here's the contact database. You know, here's a few leads, see what you can do. And all of a sudden I started getting sales. And it wasn't very hard. Mm-hmm. And being an engineer, like they needed to talk to somebody who actually understood what was going on. It wasn't this backslapping, joke-telling sales guy shtick.
Right.
It was like a real problem with a real solution. And
right.
It's like, wow. And oh, I'm telling you, the feeling when I actually got my first commission check and I got my first paycheck and I had leads coming in, it was like the feeling you have when you almost have a car accident and then you're okay and you feel the adrenaline rush through your brain.
Right.
It's like the sickening, terrifying, that's what it felt like. But then, you know, then after a while, it's like, wow, I think I'll actually be okay.
All right.
We'll actually pay off, you know, the credit card balance this month and we're not going to have to move in with my wife's parents. And man, that was close.
So now this is working. You've got a little bit of relief there, yeah, which we got to relive again, which is pretty cool. And now what happens?
So here I am. I'm the sales and marketing manager of this tiny little company. Well, we need to recruit reps and we need to recruit distributors and we need to fly to Detroit and go talk to those guys. And so we just get to work. And, you know, as your typical tiny little company, you know, we're paddling as hard as we can and the boss is trying to meet payroll every 2 weeks. And we never had any more than $2,000 or $3,000 at any one time to spend on marketing. If we did spend it, it had to come back with friends attached in 90 days or else Perry's going to be in real trouble. And I started writing magazine articles and we started getting better at lead generation. And we would concoct these interesting lead generation magnets. And the thing started growing and I'm listening to my Dan Kennedy CDs and I'm reading my newsletters and I'm connecting the dots. Like nobody's telling me this. Dan's world didn't even start to acknowledge the internet until about 2000.
Yeah.
And this is 98.
You still have to fax him to talk to him.
Right. And I'm going, hey, web page, direct mail letter, same thing.
Right.
It's like I'm connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is old school direct mail. This is internet. It's the same thing. And we're making it work. And I'm finding out that for most of our reps and distributors, we are the smallest company they rep. We're the smallest company we sell for.
Interesting.
But I was generating more leads for them than all of their other companies combined.
That's so crazy.
Because my product, it was a very narrow product, but it had a great USP.
Right.
And somebody would build this complex system. They needed one of our things in it.
Right.
And so I would sell them a $1,000 thing, but it was $50,000 of an opportunity for an electronics distributor. And so they're like, they're paying attention to me.
Right.
If Perry calls, they're taking my phone call.
Right.
Right. And so we're just navigating this. I mean, it was a tightrope walk all the time. Okay. So what happens is, it comes up in our conversations, you know, like these guys I'm working for, they're technology guys and they know how technology evolves. And it's pretty obvious to them that these like $200 circuit boards we're selling, somebody's going to turn these into a $20 chip. Who's going to do it first? And they said, we should do this first. And so they went and they raised $2 million from angel investors and they started working on a chip. I even was involved in pitching the thing to some of the early customers before it was even existing and all of that. And we're raising money. And I got to be exposed to all of these things. And so we designed this chip. And then we're at a trade show. And it was one of these conversations where you're having a conversation with another company and you're not seeing anything that would get you in trouble with a non-disclosure agreement. But the wink, wink, nod, nod is
right.
Like, and they're like, hey, you know what? I think we need to sit down and talk. So they sign NDAs and they have this meeting. Mm-hmm. And we find out they're working on the same chip as we are.
Okay.
But we're 6 months ahead of them and they're late. And they're a public company.
Mm.
And if they release this chip late, their stock is going to go down.
Okay.
So we have them in a corner. And so they bought a $4 million company with $2 million in debt for 4.5x multiple, $18 million, 20% cash, 80% stock. And it happened. The agreement was signed just before 9/11, and the transfer happened just after 9/11. 9/11 didn't blow the deal apart miraculously.
Well, and you have a piece of this?
And I had a piece.
Fantastic. So how did that happen? So the logical path would be, you're there, you're generating these leads, you get noticed, and you get promoted, right?
Yeah, well.
But somehow you managed to get equity, which is amazing. I'd love to.
Well,
to explore that.
The equity part was my boss, this is before he raised money or anything, about 2 months after I started, I'm working late one night, and Mike, the owner of the company, he comes and he sits down and he goes, so Perry, how do I keep you here? And I'm like, wow. The last boss was like, how do I get rid of you? Right?
This is an improvement.
It turned into this golden handcuffs conversation. And he goes, look, we want to build this chip. We want to keep our good people. You're good at this. You really put your heart in it. And so I came in one Saturday and I negotiated a pay cut in exchange for stock options.
That's really smart.
Yeah. Well, he's like, you know, I can't pay you what I'm paying you now and give you stock options, but if you'll take a little bit of a haircut. So we agreed. Then we developed the chip and everything. And so what happened when the company got sold was, oh my goodness, the flurry of politics and posturing and all the employees like jockeying for positions and everything. I just kind of refused to get caught up in all that. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it was I knew that I was a really key person in this company.
Right.
And I knew that several other people that were jockeying for position were just posers.
Right.
But I hated working for them.
So you have a piece of the company. And
I have a piece of the company.
It's sold for $18 million.
Yep.
And are you supposed to go with that at that point? Like, is there some contract that requires you to stay?
Well, so here's what happens. They make me a job offer, and it's not a terribly attractive job offer, mm-hmm. but it is after 9/11, which right. all of a sudden was a giant shock.
Right.
And they said, well, the thing is you have to tie up some of your stock options if you want to stay. Mm-hmm. And so I went, and I had this little group of people. I had gone to a Dan Kennedy event. I had passed out a piece of paper. I got a bunch of emails, and I had started a Yahoo discussion group of Dan Kennedy people.
All right.
And I emailed the Dan Kennedy people on the Yahoo group and I said, hey, here's what's going on. And there was this one guy, his nickname was Quick Kill. His real name was John LaTourette.
Okay.
And he was a crazy martial arts guy.
Wow. Okay.
And he says, Perry, I've done this 3 times. I've sold 3 companies and every time they wanted me to stick around and help them out. He goes, every time they didn't get it, it was misery. He says, listen, think of it like you got a divorce and she's gone. You don't care who she's sleeping with. You don't care what she's doing.
Right.
You have a new life. She has a new life. The company you worked for, now that it is sold, does not exist.
Right.
Perry, take the money and run, run, run.
All right. Did you listen?
Now, my wife had told me this. My wife had told me. She said, Perry, this is your chance. And I'm like, it's 9/11. The world is in a state.
She said, this is your chance to run or this is your chance to
hang out my shingles. She right. said, this is your chance. You've wanted to start a company, Perry. Right. Now's the time. I'm like, oh, now? Really? Are you sure? And she's like, yeah. And then Quick Kill is like, yeah.
Right.
So I turn in my resignation. 2 hours later, one of these guys who was like one of the not good worker guys that is posturing for position, he stands over me and watches me while I clean out my desk to make sure I don't steal anything, which is like the most degrading.
Right.
I helped you grow this company from 200K to 4 million, and you're afraid I'm going to steal a stapler?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Anyway, I just endured it, put my stuff in the box. And I'll never forget, you know, getting in my car and seeing the place through my rearview mirror for the last time. I looked, I was like, this is it, man. Perry, you heard about this on all your Amway tapes and you're doing it like right now. And I leave this job, I'm done. And here we are, it's a month after 9/11. And I guess we're going to do the next chapter of my life. I guess I'm going to be a consultant now.
So two things I'd like to talk about. One is, are you still consulting? Is that still a primary part of your business?
I'm consulting, but increasingly the focus is equity consulting.
So that's really cool.
And I enjoy it. I mean, I do. I like the problems. I like the challenges.
You're going to always be curious, which is
cool.
Oh,
man.
Why do you think that is?
Why am I so curious?
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about that. First off, one of the most tragic things that losses that you could ever have is the loss of your curiosity.
Agree.
And man, like there's so many people like going to school in windowless compounds, you know, getting, you know, hand slapped by rulers of teachers who are just trying to make them go on the treadmill. Maybe one of the reasons I'm curious is because I found that discovery only creates more curiosity. Like you never get to the bottom.
There is no bottom.
There is no bottom. Yeah. Like I think it's turtles all the way down. Like you can just you just go and go and go and go. And then what starts to happen is if you do this in multiple fields, you find out that they all cross correlate.
Yes.
Like if anybody ever like had the patience to endure it, I mean, I could give some crazy, bizarre seminar on why acoustics, biological evolution, 80-20 advertising, electrical engineering, and matrix theory mathematics are all the same thing, right? Now, there might be only four people on the whole planet that would want
to sit. I'll come to that. I like that.
You know, but you see the same things over and over and over again. Like, nobody knows that Google AdWords is like a big giant acoustics problem. I mean, I would never try to explain that.
Sure.
But it's true.
So as you went along, you're doing the consulting and you bumped into Richard, is it Koch or
Kosh?
And he had built a consulting business and sold it, which is a very, very unusual thing because those are typically personal businesses, hard to sell.
Yeah.
Had you discovered the Pareto principle prior to coming into contact with him?
I discovered that 9 years. I discovered the version that I saw in his book 9 years before that.
Okay.
And I had known about 80-20 before that, but I was like most people. Like most people think they know what 80-20 is and they really don't.
I know it might be really, really hard, but if you were going to explain what it really means briefly,
so
what
here's,
would you say?
Here's what it really means. I think most people know that 20% of your customers generate 80% of your sales and 20% of the people have 80% of the money. But the real 80-20 is two things. Is number one, it's fractal, which means pattern inside a pattern inside a pattern inside a pattern. So inside every 80-20, there's another one and another one and another one. It's an infinite series.
So just for the people that are listening, if 20% of the people have 80% of the wealth, 20% of the 20% have 80% of that wealth, and so on and so on and so on. And that really just never stops.
Right. So 1% of the people have 50% of the wealth, and 0.1% of the people have 30% of the wealth. And so it keeps going. It's a law of physics. It's not just a business rule of thumb. It's infinitely self-referential, and it applies to everything in the world that runs on positive feedback. Okay, so if two 14-year-olds try Jack Daniels and they both like it, that's positive feedback. Mm-hmm. But if one of them likes it a little better than the other one, then 30 years later, one of them has a drink a week, like most people, and one of them is a stumbling drunk alcoholic. Mm. That's because the 80-20 feedback loops start going and going, and more alcohol attracts more drinking, which attracts more alcohol, which attracts more drinking. Mm. So there's a ton of things in the world that work like this.
Okay.
Almost everything in marketing works like this because all of your money comes from hyperactive customers that can't get enough of things, right? And so when I read Richard's book...
And which one did you read first?
Okay, I read the 80-20
Principle. Okay.
It's the classic book. Everybody should read the 80-20 Principle by Richard Koch. Everybody should read this book. On page 14, it was like a throwaway remark. He said, well, this has to do with fractals and chaos theory. And that's all he said about it. And I was like, I know all about that. I know what that is. I've got like 3 or 4 books about that. And all of a sudden, I was just down this rabbit hole. Well, you know, I never made any attempt to get a hold of Richard or talk to him or anything. But then some interesting things happened and somebody introduced us.
Are you consulting at this point and playing with AdWords and all those kinds of things?
Oh, yeah. Like that was, well, I met him in 2012.
Okay.
So I'm doing AdWords and doing Facebook. I'm teaching 80-20.
Were you doing equity deals before you met him, or was that something that he kind of turned you on to?
No. In fact, meeting him was a major influence in that direction.
Okay, cool. Good.
Because what he had done, he sold LEK and he had $4 million after taxes. And then he turned his $4 million into, it was $220 million by the time I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just as a private investor.
Yeah.
That is incredibly impressive.
Right.
Like, oh my word, that's almost at the level of Warren Buffett. In fact, his returns on his investment are really close to Buffett's. And Buffett's 20 years older.
And did he introduce you then through that to the BCG model and the STAR principle and all of that fun stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Which, shame on me, I should have gone deeper down the Richard rabbit hole because that book, you know, like, here's an 80-20 lesson. 1% of the authors are going to give you 50% of your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find an author that really sets your brain on fire, maybe you should read all of his other books,
exactly.
Right?
You're crazy not to.
I dipped into some of his stuff, whatever it was I looked at next, I wasn't that impressed with, and I didn't search harder. But we became friends. I mean, I didn't really understand what Richard had accomplished until I went to visit him. And I went to see him, and I would have never believed this if somebody had told me. It's like, no, this guy works an hour a day, and he made $50 million last year over and above what he was worth the year before.
Right.
And he really works an hour a day. Like, and I saw how he did his schedule. I saw, okay, so he runs his businesses and investments from 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning, and then he rides his bike for 3 hours, and then he spends the afternoon reading books and writing books, and that's not a money-making activity for him. It's all exploration.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never believed if I hadn't like been in Portugal seeing this
Watched
for myself.
Right.
And it was like, oh my word. Like, this is a guy who does intellectual exploration for a quote-unquote living.
Right.
Okay, that's what I want to do. Like,
that's like perfect for you.
And like, sometimes you need to see somebody doing something.
It actually is possible, right?
It's like, oh, okay, I get it. It's a very brilliantly conceived system. It's not haphazard. Like, you know, the 3-hour bike ride, that's a way of processing information.
Yes, it is.
He's loading everything up into memory, right? Stick in the subconscious and now go do something physical. Get mm-hmm. get your exertion, get your exercise, be healthy. You know, and when you're done with your bike ride, your problem's going to be solved.
Because your brain is processing that in the background more effectively than if you were focused on it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, always.
Yes. And so that was a huge inspiration for me. And I think we've been a great pair.
Nice.
And so, you know, we've collaborated on some things and he's helped me figure out how to look at companies that I want to take equity in and how to sift through the needles in the haystacks.
So how do you do that now? So you discovered 80-20, you dove in, you spent some time with him, which is super cool. You basically just reached out to him and did you say, Richard, tell me how I can do that? Or did
In fact, we worked out a deal. Richard will help me with stuff. And we came up with a financial arrangement. And this ended up being a lot harder than I thought it would. Like, it is working,
mm-hmm.
but the needles in haystacks was harder than I thought it would be. So probably about 4 years ago, I started actively looking for companies that we should work with. So most of the time, they don't fit Richard's criteria. Mm-hmm. He says yes to very few things that come in front of his desk.
Is there a quick criteria that you can share?
STAR Principle mm-hmm. and Simplify.
Mm-hmm.
And those are titles of 2 of his books. STAR Principle is number one. You only invest in a company that's number one in a growing market, period.
Yep.
Okay? And that applies to getting a job or a client or going into a market.
So you guys should buy Instagram, Facebook, It's hard, right? Uber would be good, you know.
Yeah, right.
It's like, but you can't, but you know, well, I mean, maybe you can, but I can't certainly currently buy those companies. So you have to find those companies in niches of niches a lot of the time, right?
Yes.
And so the challenge is discovery.
Right.
To me, that's a challenge, right? That's partially why it's so hard to find those needles in haystacks, right?
Right. And it's not the only challenge, because then you have also, does the person want to have an exit? Mm-hmm. If they don't want to have an exit, then that's not going to help me, right? And the personality dynamics have to be right. Or like, there was one company we were going to take a piece of, but then one of the partners in the company decided to get married and take a year off. And then that blew that deal up because if he wasn't involved, the thing wasn't going to grow, right? And so there's all these... It's like
other dynamics that figure in, right?
It's like the documentary where the butterflies are flying from northern Canada to Mexico and only one out of 500 of them actually gets there. You know, it's like it's like those nature shows, right? But is it a star? Is it scalable? Does it have a moat with network effects?
Right.
And is it a simplifier? I mean, that's really what we're looking for.
Right.
I mean, that really thins the haystacks.
So if you want
a lot
to understand that, you read The Star Principle.
Yes.
You read Simplify.
Read Simplify, yeah.
Probably Peter Thiel's book, maybe? Or is there a better moat-building network effect resource that you would refer people to?
The only network effect resource that's exhaustive is our Rosetta Stone program.
Okay.
And I did it because nobody else was doing it.
Okay. And that's a and program that you have available with Richard, right?
It's not with Richard. It's a seminar I did a few months ago.
Okay.
But it's on perrymarshall.com.
I watched it. So that was great. Where can people find that?
Oh, perrymarshall.com.
PerryMarshall.com. I have to spell things because when I listen to podcasts and people say things and they say them fast, I'm like, wait, what was
I'm
that?
Sorry.
And I'll play it back 30 times and I can't find it.
Yeah, I'm rushing it.
No, not at all. Just
perrymarshall.com/Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A.
Great. So give us the summary.
So network effect is really important. And it's really important because... it's the 21st century moat. It is simultaneously the thing that feeds the business and the thing that makes the business more competition-proof the bigger it gets. So here's what network effect is. Network effect is Uber gets more riders, which attracts more drivers, which lowers the wait time, which gets more riders, which attracts more drivers, which lowers the wait time. And so they go into a finite number of cities and they build up a critical mass and they get enough drivers and they get the thing going. And then pretty soon that little ecosystem is going and wow, this works. And then they go to another city, then they go to another city. Well, what happens with network effect companies is by the time the world begins to notice what you've done, it's too late.
You have an impenetrable competitive advantage, right?
Right. Yeah. Because if you stop and think about if Uber was already in your city, how would you compete with them from scratch? How would you start a taxi company with wait times of less than 6 minutes on your very first day of business?
Right.
Good luck.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And so all of the major online properties work on network effect, whether it's obvious or not.
Mm-hmm.
Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, they all run on network effect, and there's varying degrees of it. Like with Google, it's more the use of data. Google is not a social networking site.
Right.
But all of the data of every user makes every other user's experience more valuable.
Right.
And so Google has all of this information in a giant vault. So if somebody gave you the source code for all of Google's properties, but you didn't have any of the user data.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter.
Right.
Google could give the whole thing away open source.
And search feeds AdWords, which feeds AdSense, which feeds search, and so on and so forth, right?
Yes.
So,
So
in your Rosetta program, you have a three-dimensional pyramid kind of thing.
Yes.
That is traffic, conversion, and economics, as I recall.
And 80-20.
And 80-20 is circling around in all that, right? 80 is like in the middle of that. Or they're circling around, I guess. Those three triangles, as I recall, are around another triangle or something that's like a triangle that's 80-20. So how does that all relate to each other in just a brief kind of description.
So I got a call one day from Jack Bourne, my marketing manager, and goes, Perry, I had a giant epiphany. Okay. Perry, get out a pen. Perry, draw a triangle, you know, with the flat part in the bottom. Okay. And then draw an upside down triangle in the middle of it. Okay. So I did that. And he goes, okay. So lower left, put a T. That's traffic. In the top upper part, put a C. That's conversion. In the lower right, put E, economics. He goes, and then put an 80-20 in the middle. He goes, now, people talk about traffic and conversion, like the name of the seminar company, right?
Our they conference.
They say marketing is traffic and conversion, right? Yeah. I go, right. He goes, well, but marketing is not two things. It's four things. It's traffic and conversion and economics and 80-20. Mm-hmm. And he says, everything about marketing is in those four things. Now, you draw them in this triangle, the arrow goes, you start with traffic, then you convert the traffic, then you get money from the conversion, and then you reinvest your money back into traffic. It goes round and round and round.
Yep.
He goes, and 80-20 is in the middle because there's levers and all of this stuff, and mm-hmm. it's all about the levers. Mm-hmm. Now, this is when he really got me. He goes, now, he goes, Perry, this is the cool part. The cool part is it's fractal. There's a traffic conversion in economics inside just the traffic, because let's say your traffic is a Google ad. Well, the traffic of traffic is impressions. The conversion of traffic is the clicks on the Google ads. The economics of the traffic is the cost per click. It's mm-hmm. the bid price. Mm-hmm. And then the 80-20 of the Google ads is all of the columns of the spreadsheet that you get in your reports. Mm-hmm. And then it's true in the conversion one. It's true in the economics one. I'm like, oh, my word. I think he just like discovered a major conceptualization of marketing.
For people that are listening, traffic is easy. It's basically the flow of leads or interest in something, right? The conversion is easy. You're transforming those leads into people who take some sort of desired action. What is the economics part for people who are not completely sure what that is?
Okay, so economics is two things. It's A, the money you get from the customer, mm-hmm. but it's also the value you give to the customer going the other direction,
okay.
right? And it's the fundamental value of the proposition. And yep. so as the internet and internet marketing have evolved, it used to be that you just needed to be good at traffic and you could get it to work, right? Well, now, in order to make marketing work, you need to be very resourceful and clever about what are you fundamentally offering people, even a lead generation device, right? Like, what are you giving away in exchange for the email address? Mm-hmm. Well, in this day and age, it better be something pretty valuable.
Right.
Right? And so you have to be very resourceful about this. And as I explored this, I started like really, really fleshing this out. And I discovered that, you know, Jonathan Mizell's unlimited traffic technique is also buried in those little triangles. Mm. Richard's simplify concept, it sits right between conversion and economics. The STAR principle sits right between economics and traffic. There was this beautiful symmetrical thing, and everything that there is to know about marketing is somewhere in there. And so it became a model that I've started teaching my students, and like, okay, like everything about marketing is in this triangle, like right. everything. And like you and I both know, there's a lot to know yeah. about marketing,
yeah.
but it's if you have a place to hang everything, it's like you wake up in the morning. So what are we going to work on today? Mm-hmm. Do we need more traffic? Do we need better conversions? Do we need a better economic proposition? Mm-hmm. And 80-20 usually refers to finding the levers and eliminating the waste.
Sure.
It's usually what 80-20 is.
Right. Okay. So now you've got that discovery and you've got Richard and you're consulting, and you know that's a trading hours for dollars kind of proposition. He opened your eyes to the STAR principle, simplicity thing, simplify thing, and now you are in some sort of relationship with him where you're sifting through a billion companies to find the needles in the haystacks that meet the requirements that you identified. How do you find those companies? Oh, and by the way, they also have to have network effect, right?
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah.
It's like it's a really very rigorous vetting process.
as soon as Richard and I started working together, I started talking about these concepts. I started teaching these concepts. And I started trying to get my audience to start to think very differently about marketing itself. And it was very hard at first. I found that I needed to partly grow them in my own backyard and not just find them.
Okay.
If you have enough deal flow, or if, you know, if you're in the right situation, you could probably look at these things all day long. Mm-hmm. But in my particular situation, there were a very few that, you know, like low-hanging fruit, very few. Mm. What I found that I could do was I could teach people to design their business this way. And as I did that, they would start making it into the kind of business I was looking for.
And so you could shape,
yes,
the things into meeting the requirements that you needed by having the influence.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is what has actually been working. Is I have a group called Advanced Mastery Network, which is my highest end coaching group, mm-hmm. and everybody is explicitly working towards the goal of doing this. Okay.
With and then their I have company.
Of building a star business that's right. a simplifier with network effect and an exit. And some of them are doing it as owners, and some of them are doing it as consultants who are looking for, and it's working. Okay. Like, it is working. It's working with a small group of people, and then it's working with some of our private clients. So one of our private clients that we have an equity play with is a service company that installs technology, and they're in about 20 or 30 cities.
Great.
Okay. Okay. And the technology's hot, and it's harder to do than it looks on the surface. And there's all these logistical things that they've got to figure out. And within a few months of working with them, we increased their inquiries to appointments ratio from 8% to 30%.
Okay.
Well, major critical element yep. of the business, yep. right? So we're making major contributions to making their business work. They're good at what they're doing. And it's just been a really good situation.
That's a quadrupling roughly of the leads, right? 8 mm-hmm. to 30. Now you say, by the way, we also would like some equity, or how do you trans?
So the conversation started with, everybody knew that everybody at the table is interested in an exit event where everybody has a nice liquidity experience, okay?
So you had a conversation prior to the
yes,
deal.
Yes.
Are you guys open to, or
yes.
are you folks open to us having some interest in this? So, is that an earn-in based on performance? Like, if we can triple, quadruple leads, then we have the opportunity to get options, or how does that?
In this particular situation, it's a above baseline.
Okay.
So when we came on board, they were doing X revenue.
Yep.
So anything below that is
That's
off
theirs.
The table. And then we get a percentage of everything above that, mm-hmm. and it vests in a period of, I don't remember if it's 1 or 2 years. I always like it when there's an incentive for growth,
yep.
there's a base, and there's equity.
Yep.
Those three things, that is a great deal.
Agree 100%. I have made almost all of the money I have ever made in life through equity deals. So to me, there's no better way. And baseline is one of 8 different ways that we do that. You know, and each of those has its own 80-20,
yeah.
right? So, so I think a lot of that is just mindset, that people want to work with good people and realize the precious thing that a valuable contributor to a company is, and or anyone who is worth working with will recognize that and be very open to some sort of equity deal. It's
yes.
just a question of negotiating and the mental, the, you know, the mindset that it's possible, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Ed Hericke, he's one of my longtime customers. He sold his company to PayPal for a very large sum of money, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. I like to call that an undisclosed sum, which means you can buy airplanes now, right?
Yes. Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
Yes.
And he said, I want to incentivize everybody who's on my core team to be thinking about this thing on the weekend.
Yes.
I don't want them clocking out at 5 o'clock on Friday and not think about their job.
They can physically go with their families, but we would like some brain time outside of that 9 to 5.
That is what you want. And how are you going to get it from really talented people if you don't give them something that's really worth hanging on to?
Amen. Absolutely. So thank you so much for the business side of this conversation and for your personal story, which I find really, really super interesting.
Thank you.
I really liked, by the way, to me, one of the coolest things that I've heard in a while is that I think you said you can't have creativity without constraint.
Yes.
And I really, really like that because with a box that you must fit in, you must get creative. So the constraint promotes the creativity as opposed to creativity unbound, which can just go in circles and circles and circles and circles, right?
The constraint is the source of the creativity. And there's a great book by David Byrne of the Talking Heads, and it's called How Music Works or something like that. And in this book, very early in the book, he says, most people have this idea that artists go into this like perfect creative space and they birth this pure idea and then they bequeath it to the world. He goes, no. He goes, music and art are always born out of the environment that they are birthed into, okay? So like, if your music is birthed into a giant cathedral with a 10-second reverberation time, the art that you're going to make is going to be like long chanting organ notes and things that change very slowly, okay? And if your art comes from a noisy club in New York City, it's going to sound like punk rock.
Right.
He goes, you cannot separate the constraint from the art. Like the art and the constraint are one and the same.
Right.
And so maybe that's one of the reasons I enjoy marketing and consulting and business strategy and everything, because everybody's got an arm tied behind their back.
Right.
There's always something.
Right.
It's like, man, if only we could do this. Like, and what you need to do is
if we had budget, if we had a better product, if we had a better audience,
better platform. Wow, we have like zero budget. Yeah. Or like, we have $3,000 and that is it.
Yeah.
And we're done. So what can you do with your $3,000? That's fun.
Yeah, that is fun. I agree 100%. Perry, thank you so much for coming and hanging out today. That was a fantastic conversation. And just to repeat, if people want to reach out and get a hold of you and find out more about you, what are the best places for them to do that?
Just go to perrymarshall.com. And, you know, if you want to personally connect, there's contact forms and stuff and you can...
You're on all the socials?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're on all the socials. So
sweet. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. For more information, visit businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.